Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
Hey bosses, this is Johnny and welcome to an Invest Like a Boss podcast. I am out here in Tbilisi, Georgia, and Sam surprised me again. Hola, amigo. ¿Dónde estás?
So I just told Johnny I was in Colombia, but what Johnny doesn't realize is I'm in Columbia, Missouri, not the country.
Oh my God. Why am I speaking Spanish? And why are you in Missouri?
I've never been here. I came out to see Brian Worley, the founder and CEO of Patient. And I just wanted to come out and see a nice small Midwest town. And that is exactly what it is. Very peaceful here.
You know what? I'm actually very happy for you that you're not in South America, because I think that the reason why you travel so fast and so much is you're always looking for kind of the next best thing instead of just enjoying where you are. So I'm very happy that you're traveling locally instead of internationally this time.
That's right. Well, and the guest we have on this week, Ken Honda, I've been looking forward to having him on for a while. And he's actually going to be helping all of us. And he wrote a best-selling book that's called Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money. And I think this is going to be a great episode, Johnny.
Yeah, and he has the coolest nickname ever, Zen Millionaire. Did he give that to him, right? Or is that his actual nickname?
That's his actual nickname.
That's pretty cool.
Well, it's also what he's called in his book. And this concept really makes sense. And I think it's one of the most important concepts that we can get right as investors, as business people. Because if you have a negative relationship with money, then nothing else matters in making money. If you make many, many, many more dollars.
Yeah, definitely agree. I'm excited for this episode because we're all about making money, but also the real reason why we're making money is to be happy. So let's do both. You know, let's make sure we don't get one without the other. So let's have on the Zen Millionaire himself.
Everyone, welcome back. We have a special guest on today, none other than the Japanese best-selling Zen Millionaire, Ken Honda. Ken, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Sam, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I appreciate that. And it's great to have you on. I first have to say I love the book. I've read it and I've also listened to it on audio. I thought both were fantastic. So that is, of course, Happy Money, The Japanese Art of Making Peace with Your Money. And I'll tell you, when I saw this book, I was like, I need to read this. This is going to play an important part of the development of my relationship with money, of course. And I think it's so important that people get this right. I wanted to just kind of jump back into your life without, of course, spoiling the book, but just to let the listeners know, you know, when did you realize this was going to be an important topic for you to dive deeper into and help educate others?
You know, there are so many occasions, but the unique one is I was approached by a Japanese woman, and she asked me if she could take a look at my wallet. And I passed my wallet to show her. Those days, you know, they're interested in what kinds of wallet the celebrities have. So I didn't care so much. And she took out all the bills from my wallet, which is kind of unusual. And she was checking something. And she said, "This is good, this is good, this is good. Ken, all your money is good." And returned my wallet back to me. And I got very curious. I asked her, "What did you do?" She said, "I checked all your money and your money is smiling." And I said, "Wow, my money is smiling?" And she said, "I see things that other people don't see. So Ken, you must be helping a lot of people and just receive money with appreciation. That's why your money is smiling. On the other hand, your money could be crying in your wallet if you're taking advantage of other people or doing what you don't like. And your money could be crying or angry." And I said, "What?" And that is how I started to think money as energy.
We often ponder the importance of money in life and in happiness. Of course, on this podcast, we talk a lot about investing and striving to make more money and do better professionally. And then we always try to bring it back into, well, where does the extra money and the surplus of money fit into your life and happiness? And Johnny and I tried to do quite a bit of experimenting on this topic, just in different types of lifestyles. But maybe one of the most difficult questions to answer, although we've all heard it before, but you've asked so many people about the relationship with money in your background. Do you think generally that money can absolutely buy happiness? And if so, to what degree?
Mm-hmm. Money cannot buy happiness, that everybody knows. But money can reduce your stress and unhappiness level greatly if you have money. For example, if you have money, you don't have to worry about so many things. And if you have money, other people can do it for you, and the things that you don't like. So money can definitely reduce your stress. But money itself cannot buy happiness. So you really have to know, you may think that money can buy happiness. Money could contribute to happiness, but it's basically nothing to do with it.
Now, earlier you were talking about, although you didn't put it in words, a big concept of the book and a narrative of the book is happy money versus unhappy money. And in the story you just previously told, the lady saw that you apparently had happy money.
Mm.
For people that have unhappy money, do they typically share the same types of common characteristics, rich people, poor people? You know, do you see common threads of people that typically have unhappy money?
Yes. People with happy money are smiling, so you can tell without even looking at the wallet, probably. And people with unhappy money, it doesn't really matter how much they make or how much they have. It's just about their attitude toward life. So if people are not smiling and they seem angry or cold or aloof, that shows that they are in the flow of unhappy money. That means they are always in fear around money. And it doesn't really matter how much money you have. Unhappy people always worry about money. That's it.
Do you think that unhappy people, that the majority of that unhappiness is through money or through other events of life, whether it be family or other scenarios that they're living through?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it may look like it's money related, but it's actually nothing to do with money. Most of us experience hardships through relationships and health challenges and career challenges. And oftentimes money is related, but most of unhappiness comes from unhappy relationships. It could be with money, with your health, or with their life. So if you have an unhappy attitude for life itself, you not only cannot have happy money, and also you cannot have happy life.
Absolutely. Well, I have to believe that a lot of people's relationship with money and just the way that their general outlook on life is left over from childhood beliefs or childhood experiences. Do you find that also to be true, or do you feel that people's relationship to money often changes at some midpoint?
Yes, they do change, but our basic beliefs are formed till we're 7 or 8 in our family. So oftentimes I do money counseling for people, and I call it healing the money wounds. We have been hurt so many times around money. You know, even though our parents may have a little money, we've been denied for Christmas presents or soccer lessons, piano lessons, ballet lessons. And then we experience a lot of hurt when we're small. And later on, we realize that a lot of things are limiting our life. And it's basically, it comes from our childhood beliefs. And of course, you can heal it and change it. But unless you face what happened and what you have in your psyche, it's almost like, I call it money blueprint. It's like a blueprint for building buildings. So we have unique money blueprints in our system. So you have to take a look at what's in it. And then if there's something that you don't like, and mostly money blueprints come from your parents. So as an adult, you have to be responsible for what you have.
Now, if money is energy, which I agree with, and I like the narrative of that in the book, I'm not sure if this is a misconception or a myth, but to me, I look at TV and I look at some of the people out there in the world that are making the most money, and they're the people in the world that also have terrible reputations, typically, in a lot of cases. I wouldn't say typically speaking, but in a lot of cases. And I think there's a lot of people out there that believe that if money is energy, then how do all these bad people attract more and more and more money. Shouldn't all the money be going to the good people out there, all the saints and the charity workers and stuff? But how does that actually happen? Yeah. Why does it always seem like bad people make all the money?
I agree. That is exactly the question that I asked my mentor like 30 years ago. And my mentor laughed and smiled. And yes, you know, the reason why money gets attracted to bad people is money is simply energy. So the people who are good at attracting money, they have a certain energy. It doesn't really matter. They're criminals or they're happy, great people. Money gets attracted to actions and a lot of energy. So it could be sucked into a black hole of, you know, unhappy people. So if there is this void of money, you know, the money gets attracted to those too. So it's nothing to do with whether the person good or bad, you know, and also the relations between how money gets attracted. So bad people can attract money because they have the power to attract, unfortunately.
So do you think that there is a right amount of money out there? I've commonly heard that $75,000 in annual income is the optimal amount of money. I know you've spoke with people in depth of all wealth levels, way up higher in the income levels and of course lower. Do you find that there's a right amount of money to optimize happiness around?
You know, when I talk about $75,000 in New York or in Tokyo or London, people will laugh at me. You know, you can't make a living with that low income. And if I just talk with somebody from Midwest or countryside, they say 75,000, you're a millionaire, you know. So it's up to where you live. So it's not about how much you make or how much you have. You have to have a minimum of somewhat, depending on where you live. But you don't have to have super extra money to be happy. And if you if the money covers your basic needs and plus a little more, your happiness level doesn't change so much after certain amount of money. As you said, so it's more of your attitude. If you can appreciate money coming in and money going out, you can be happy. And even if you make millions of dollars, if you cannot feel satisfaction, which is really the key to happiness, you are driven by this greed that I need to make more and more and stay very unhappy.
Yeah, and I think that is something that wealthy people, especially people that come into wealth, really struggle with, because it, at least in my experience, they feel that they always need more and that they're never truly wealthy, even though they have more money than they could ever possibly spend reasonably in a lifetime. What would you say to somebody, what would you say to the person that's worth, you know, $50 or $100 million that just, you know, they go out and they pay for a $100 dinner and it stings them? How do you diagnose that, and how do you start to fix that feeling that they might have?
Right. You know, I've done a lot of interviews, and one time I had a chat with a very wealthy man, and I asked him, when did you start feeling wealthy? I assumed like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, or when I first had $10 million. And he said, I don't feel wealthy at all. Like, I was so shocked. And I asked him why. He said, because I don't have a private jet. You know, so if you have a high standard for feeling satisfied, you'll be in trouble. And later on, I met with a man with a private jet, and I asked the same question. And he said, no, I'm not a wealthy man. I'm comfortable, but I'm not wealthy by any means. And I asked him, why? You have a private jet. And he said, no, my plane is small. It can seat only 6 people. So, you know, that's the attitude. So, you know, if you have a private jet, still not feeling wealthy, why? Because your friend has a bigger jet. So if you're into comparison, you'll be always feeling very miserable. So you really have to draw a line. So what I would suggest is, if you have a roof on your over your head, and if you can eat every day, and you're all set. So that is the attitude you have to have. Otherwise, you feel like, well, I have only one car, or I have only 2 cars, I have only 1 house, so I have only 4 bedrooms. Or, you know, so if you just keep wanting more, you'll be in this hell of dissatisfaction.
And it seems like that is possibly going to become more and more difficult in life. We have social media now everywhere in our mm-hmm. face. Even if we're on a wonderful vacation ourselves, we're looking at social mm-hmm. media and someone's mm-hmm. on a better vacation. And all of a sudden, yes. our vacation sucks and I want to be somewhere else. And I yes. think this is potentially one of the, it's obviously proven itself as a useful tool, but I feel like especially children now growing up will have a very difficult time with this this new trendy word called FOMO, because mm-hmm. it's the constant comparison of everyone else's life to yours. And even if you think you're doing better relatively, there's always somebody mm-hmm. that's doing something yes. better and making more money and has a prettier girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I don't, mm-hmm. you have a young daughter. How do you help educate her on of course money, but also with this new, you know, social pressure in a sense?
Mm-hmm. So we have talked a lot about what is social norm. Because for some people, if your kids go to private school in Hollywood, probably it's going to be like movies, right? And then you have to have a Porsche to go to school. So you really have to have common sense in you, what's right for your age and what's right for your potential income. And the key, especially for, I've written a few books on how to educate your kids with money. I hope I can translate into English, but you really have to teach your kids how to be satisfied wherever you are and whatever you have. Otherwise, you know, you're into comparison with other people and then you feel miserable. So the only thing you can compare with is yourself and your past. That's it. And some people have more, some people have less, but it's nothing to do with it. It's almost like weight. If some people is heavier than you or lighter than you, you know, you don't feel probably as pressured as the other things. But if people have more stuff, you know, less stuff, more fashionable, less fashionable, you care so much, especially in your teens. So you have to mm-hmm. teach younger people, you know, before they hit teens, that this is what you're going to experience. So don't dig a hole for yourself and fall. Because a lot of kids fall into the a hole exactly that they're digging. Yeah, it's not in the U.S. It's everywhere, in China, Europe, Japan. So it's not U.S. problem.
Speaking of other countries, you spend a lot of time in, of course, Japan, your mm-hmm. home nation. And then also, I know mm-hmm. you, I believe you lived in Boston, was it, for a few
yes.
years?
Yes, uh-huh.
So you've had to experience, you know, two different cultures, both first world, big economies. You know, how do you see the people's relationship with money? And you can translate that directly into happiness between mm-hmm. Japan and America.
You know, what's interesting is happiness level for money, we are about the same. But the way we react to where we are is very different. So when Japanese people feel fear and anxiety around money, they tend to save money. And in North America, what I notice is like when they feel fear and anxiety around money, they try to spend money to feel the control. So it's a different approach, but the reaction is the same. We are feeling fearful about money. And so either Japanese people feel like I have to save money because I'm afraid. Whereas American people feel like, oh, I have to spend money so I can feel I'm in control. And both sides are not happy. So I hope if Japanese and American people can meet in somewhere in the Pacific Ocean, we'll be very balanced.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think as a whole, with people in their relationship with money, I think the reason it's so important is because if you don't get it right, or if you have a negative relationship with money or about spending or where you currently sit, and you have the wrong energy about it, no matter how much money you make and how far up the ladder you move, it might not help anything. In fact, it might in some cases magnify the negative relationship.
Yes.
And yes. Please expand on that thought. It's more of me just talking out loud and trying to underscore the narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you said it so beautifully. And so that's why I suggest a very simple Zen practice. It's been taught by my mentor, Wahid Takeda, who's called Warren Buffett of Japan. And he said the happiness and the key to wealth is appreciation and gratitude. So he suggested when money comes in, you say, arigato, or thank you to money. When the money leaves your life, when you spend it, also say, arigato, thank you for staying with me. So arigato in, arigato out. Thank you when the money comes in, and thank you when money goes out. So by doing that, you start the cycle of appreciation. And what I said, human mind is very interesting because it can only focus one thing at a time. So if you start being in gratitude, you cannot worry about money. And so if you keep doing this practice, arigato in, arigato out, around money, in about a week, you realize that, oh, gee, I forgot how to worry about money.
I love it. I think it's fantastic advice. I can't wait to listen to that again and drive it home. I wanted to ask you a quick question just about retired people and the older generation, least in the U.S., we call it the baby boomers. And I know money worries can often be worse as life goes on. I think the number one fear, at least in the USA right now, is outliving money. It's actually the number one fear, more so than dying itself or public speaking, is outliving money. So I imagine as you get older, money worries and relationship with money potentially can become worse. And I just wanted to see if you had thoughts on that or how you would go about working with older clientele on their money worries.
Yes, once again, it's nothing to do with money. It's more about relationships. And the reason that why I'm saying is that even if you have no money, if you have five young friends who can support you, you'll be okay. So I'd suggest older people to start creating fun relationships with younger people. And by doing that, you have you will start creating a safety net. You know, I always talk about this and kind of half joke and half serious, but if you're in financial trouble, go stay with your friend for a week. I'm sure you have a few friends. And then do household chores and all that. And then move to your friend number two next week. And then third friend, third week, and keep doing that. And if you have more than 50 friends, after about a year, you can go back to your friend number one and say, it's been a long time, and start over the free life again. So without money, you can keep going. And if you have a lot of friends, especially young ones, who are very happy to support you, both financially and mentally, you don't have to have money. So instead of save all the money, if I were you, I would start spending money on young people. And then what's almost like an investment, an emotional investment. Mm. And if they just feel like you're a part of their family, probably newfound young friends are more dependable than your own kids. Because, some people feel so supportive for people that they learn so much from. Mm-hmm. So what I advise is become mentors and friends for young people, and they can help you in return.
I think that's great advice. And likewise, Ken, for the younger generation that might just be getting out of college, hopefully they don't have too much debt, but they're just getting started in their career, in their life, in their money-making pursuits. What general advice would you have for them just to ensure that they have a good relationship and happy money in their wallet as they start their path in this world?
Mm-hmm. So for a lot of young people in North America, the biggest problem is student loans. And so they probably feel they're already burdened when they start fresh. It's not fresh. It's almost like a burden on your shoulders already before you start. So I want you to start thinking of debt from a new perspective. A lot of people think and talk about debt as a burden. I look at debt in a totally different light. When bank and your friends or somebody loan you some money, they do that because they're convinced that you're going to pay them back. So in other words, debt is a symbol of trust that somebody placed on you. So instead of feeling like, oh, I'm so burdened with debt of $50,000 or $100,000 of student loan, you can feel like, I have so much trust from the banks and from College Loan Institute that I will be wealthy enough to pay back the loans. So it's already a strong and deep trust placed on you. So instead of feeling burdened, wow, you know, I have this huge trust. And then what's interesting is that if you just transform your relationship with money, you also have a totally different career. Because once you're in gratitude, people love you more, respect you more, and they give you a higher salary if you appreciate your boss and other people. And so start your life with gratitude, and that really opens doors to new life.
Ken, great advice. Thank you so much for your work in the field and your dedication to the topic. We'll be sure to leave links to Happy Money in the show notes. And everybody, I hope you enjoyed listening to the Japanese best-selling Zen millionaire himself, Ken Honda. Ken, thanks for taking time out of your day to join us on the show.
Thank you so much, Sam. And listeners, I hope and I wish all the best to you. Thank you.
Money, 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 money. Happiness. I think that should be the new theme song, because that's what it's about, right?
It's got to go one and two. It can't be one without the other. Otherwise, we're screwed as investors if we do well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think I know we talk about this a lot. We think about it a lot. But I think it's because we are both very fortunate and we've built up our lives and our income where we have the time to think about it. I think a lot of people are struggling with the day-to-day. Even if they're making a lot of money, they just never really have time to reflect and think about what makes them happy and if they're on the right journey or not.
I agree, Johnny. I had a question for you to think about. What was the last transaction that you just had? I'm sure you had one today. What was the transaction that you had?
Oh, man. You're going to be so jealous at how good my life is here. I think this today is like your – if you were in my position, this would be your perfect day as well. Mm-hmm. So my last transition was a one-hour massage at this really nice spa.
God. I was hoping you were going to say something like really boring, like paying a taxi driver – in a busy city or something like that.
No, I mean I've only had three transactions today. I had two cups of coffee at this really nice cafe in my gym that where I work from. Everyone's super friendly. Every morning I wake up, I walk 15 minutes to the gym, and I know you're the same. You love to walk, especially to explore new cities. Mm-hmm. I get there, everybody's super friendly and smiling. You know, we're saying Garmajoba to each other, which is, you know, hello in Georgian. And the girl at the cashier, she knows my order. So I don't even have to say what I want. She just starts making my coffee. And 20 minutes later, she knows I want a second cup. So she makes another one. And I think this is something that I didn't really appreciate for a long time. But I know this is something that you really like. You like developing these relationships, you know, with the local shop owners and the cashiers and, you know, mm-hmm. having them know you. And I never really cared about that too much, to be honest. But recently that I've been here, I really like it again.
Yeah, that sense of community. And then also when you pay them and support them, it feels good, right?
Yeah, and I always leave a tip, even though it's actually – Georgia's not a big tipping culture. Mm-hmm. And it almost kind of makes me like tipping more because they really appreciate it. Because it's not one of those cultures where they get offended if you give them a tip, which is weird for a lot of Americans to think about because we're such a big tipping culture. But in China – they get offended if you give them a tip. It's against their culture. It makes it feel like you're looking down on them, and you know they're either not getting paid enough, or you're above them, or you're bribing them or something. It's really strange. So in places like Georgia, it's not expected, but it's appreciated.
So when you made those transactions, you felt good about it. When you paid, you felt good. That's the sense that I'm getting out of those, even though it's, of course, a great value. But you really enjoyed making that transaction, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's for a couple of reasons that you already hit on. One is I'm doing it because I want to do it. It's not like I feel like, oh, crap, I have to fill up the car with gas again. Oh, crap, I have to pay this bill. Oh, crap, you know, I'm overpaying for some mediocre mm-hmm. thing. I feel like I'm getting a really good value, especially because things are so cheap in Georgia and high quality. And mm-hmm. I think that's kind of a big key to it is spend our, you know, when we spend our money on things that we feel like are good value, that we enjoy spending money on, and it makes the other person kind of happy, we're adding value to the world, then why not?
Mm-hmm. So I've really been taking time to reflect when I spend money now. After I've listened to Happy Money on audio, also read the book, and I've really been trying to be aware of my feelings when I purchase things. And it's almost always different, but I really took note of when I was just recently buying a flight to Spain to go meet my dad. And my dad is actually flying to Spain as well. And it was to get on the same flight as my dad was going to be like an extra $180. And I just couldn't bring myself to do that. And I was thinking, well, I'll get a worse flight that's not with my dad just to save the $180. And when I arrive to Spain, we'll have to, you know, somehow arrange to meet up and take separate taxis to the hotel and all this stuff. And it was like this pain I felt inside to think about spending that extra $180, right, Johnny? Because mm-hmm. I think that's just how you and I were generally raised to like, mm-hmm. find value, be frugal, save. But then I started thinking about it, like, why would I have – I'm having this kind of once a year opportunity to do something cool with my dad. And if I'm not going to spend the extra $180 to sit next to my dad on that flight and keep things simple and fun and organized and together, then like, what are you making money for, right?
Yeah. And especially because it's not mm-hmm. an amount that will significantly hurt you financially. You know, mm-hmm. I think,
absolutely.
Yeah. I think if the choice was you either can't go to Spain or you guys, you know, or have to cut the trip short or something. Yeah. Then make the sacrifice. But in your situation, and I think a lot of people's situation, that $180 really isn't going to make a big difference. So mm-hmm. why not, you know, make it a more enjoyable experience?
Right. And so I think previously I would have spent that extra $180 and would have had this generally negative feeling inside me. And then after reading this book, I try to reposition it in my head as a very positive spend, a very positive experience to be able to do that. And then I've translated this into further transactions like an Uber. For instance, I was getting an Uber to go meet my friend in Tampa for some drinks. And the quote was like $16. And I'm thinking, it's burning inside me, like, this is outrageous. This is an overcharge. This Uber's never this expensive. But really, I should just be thinking of it like, hey, I'm getting the opportunity to go have drinks with a friend, catch up about things that we haven't talked about in several months. And I don't have to think about driving drunk. I don't think we're about worrying about catching a ride home. And I turn that feeling of negative about spending money into a positive. And I think this is kind of the narrative of happy money in a lot of the concepts is if you go out and spend money and every time on a given day you have say 10 transactions and every time you spend, you have this little sense of, ugh, gripe. Oh, this is a waste. This is not necessary. I don't enjoy this. That leads to negative feelings all day long. But if you can just enjoy that sense of spending and contributing to local community and shops and everybody around, and you can turn those negative feels into a positive feeling every time you spend, then your day just feels so much better. And that's a big part of this concept of happy money.
Yeah, I definitely like that a lot. And I think like we can take it almost a little bit further where sometimes we spend money for the wrong reasons, even though it makes us happy. It's maybe covering up and making us temporarily happy. I used to have an online shopping addiction. It almost sounds silly to, you know, say it, but it was true where I hated my job so much that I would browse Amazon all day and just order crap that I probably didn't really need, but things that I thought would make me happy. You know, the joy of browsing mm-hmm. and researching and then buying was exciting. The joy of getting that package in the mail and opening it was exciting. But really, mm-hmm. it was a cover up for my life kind of lacking meaning, you know, my relationships lacking, you know, and also just not really doing much and just saying, you know, I'm like, why am I working? If I'm going to work and hate this job, then I might as well spend it on something that I enjoy. But really, in the grand scope, it didn't make me any happier.
You've been through quite a quest on your investing career and just financial path, I would say, over the last 3 years. How do you feel now compared to when we started this podcast? When you think about money in all aspects, where are you right now in your head?
So I was actually just thinking about it today. I think while getting the massage, or maybe I was in the sauna or something, and I was thinking, man, I'm really, really happy. Like, I feel very content. I feel safe. I feel financially secure. Not, you know, that I can go the rest of my life and like fly business class all the time and, you know, ball out. But I know that I'm at a point now where, you know, if I needed the basics, I couldn't work anymore for some reason. I can live a normal life probably for the rest of my life, and you know, somewhere cheap like Thailand or somewhere here in Georgia, and not have to stress about, you know, about money. And I think that's a very important place for everyone to get to, especially mm-hmm. as they get older into their retirement, is to be able to live a basic life and have your needs taken care of. I think when I first started, I was more kind of gung-ho about trying to make more money and grow my net worth. But I was also in a kind of a scared, fragile state, thinking, what if, you know, things stop working? What if, you know, sales for my stores, you know, stop working? What if Google changes their policies? You know, what if, you know, what if? And mm-hmm. now I'm at a point where everything else is a bonus. I think, you know, even if I never make any more money, and knock on wood, I would be okay. I wouldn't stress too much. I would be like, everything else from now on is, you know, is a nice to have, not a must have. And what about you? Like, with your situation, you had the big windfall and the money in the last 3 years, has it grown, or is it going down, or is it staying the same?
It's hard to tell with my startup investments, because if all those turn to zero, then it's going to be down quite a bit.
Okay.
If those all break even, then I'll probably break even. If somehow those go up a lot, then, or have a big return, then I'll probably move up. But it's been an interesting, since the exit, it's been interesting. I've gone through all types of emotional cycles with my relationship to money and feelings about money. And, you know, I think the more that you have, the more assets you have, the more that you feel you should be able to grow your assets. But as we've found out and heard so many times from interviewing interesting people, that just maintaining your wealth is often extremely challenging for a lot of people. And growing your wealth can be, you know, it can be a lifelong quest to try to figure out that one out. But as we know, people often equate their personal wealth to their net wealth. And when you see that net wealth stay the same or go down, it can also often cause feelings of depreciation, like your actual stock and your stock is depreciating. But I haven't gone through too many down cycles. Of course, we've all heard stories of super rich billionaires that go bankrupt, so that's always a concern. But one thing that I've learned from you, Johnny, and that I also encourage the listeners to do, that I've recently done, is every now and then you just got to flush a ton of things out and realize that no matter what you're spending right now, you don't need that much to survive. Now, people have all types of responsibilities out there, so this isn't always the case. Some people have big families to take care of, and, you know, college and all these different things. But in my case, you know, I can easily spend $10,000 on up a month in the U.S., but I can also just go live in South Carolina cheap for $1,500 a month. So I've been really cutting back spending the last couple of months just to give that myself that feeling of reassurance that if things ever got really hard, I have places I could go stay for free. I have a great friend network, and I know I can live cheap and be basically just as happy as I am when I spend a lot of money.
So I think a really good hack would be to completely start over, like basically cut the expenses and completely start over. So instead of trying to figure out, like, okay, maybe I can save a little money here and there, do a hard reset and say, what is the bare minimum that I can live off of monthly and still have a comfortable, or, you know, be happy, basically. And mm-hmm. happiness is going to be different for everyone, right? You know, for some people, it might be you have to be by the beach to be happy. For some people, they are okay with a cabin in the woods. So whatever your situation is, you know, figure out, you know, what is the minimum, like, the minimum apartment size, the minimum square footage, the type of car that I have, or the type, you know, how many times I go out to eat, and just develop a baseline. And that way you can just kind of live off of that and say, okay, I know with this, I'm happy and I can do it. So, but then allow yourself to spend money on things that really give you joy.
Wise words, Johnny. So bosses out there, I implore you to start thinking about your relationship with money. Start thinking about and reflecting on your daily transactions. How do you feel when you spend that money? How do you feel when you receive that money? That one's probably more obvious. Mm-hmm. But get out there and think about that. We'll leave links to Ken's book in the show notes, Happy Money. It's a great book. I definitely encourage everyone to give it a listen or a read. And Johnny, you have some friendly new reviews to give shout outs to?
Oh man, so many good ones. So big thank you for everyone all over the world. Obviously, we have a lot of people from the US, but I want to read one from Rob Dog from Australia. He says, 5 stars, really enjoying this podcast and taking away so many lessons that I can apply to my own investing. Both Sam and Johnny's alternative investment and asset ideas offer a new way of thinking about generating solid returns and passive income. I might now even visit Eastern Ukraine. Thank you, Rob Dog from Australia, for that. So Sam, it was really fun catching up with you, and I'm glad that you're checking out small town Columbia, Missouri.
Small town USA, it's the way to go.
Yeah, I think that's your happy place. It seems like every time I speak to you and then you're in some small place and just kind of chilling, you're a happy guy.
Yeah, small towns of the USA is just, they're magic, honestly.
All right, I love it. So I look forward to catching up with you in person. And listeners, thanks so much for sharing this show with all your friends and for posting these reviews. So we'll see all of you somewhere in the world. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.